Hi, welcome to Starbucks. What can I get you?
Can I have a venti caramel macchiato?
Yeah, you sure can.
And for the syrup, can you do 20 pumps, actually?
20 whole pumps?
Yes, 20 pumps. And then, do you have whipped cream?
Yeah, tons of it.
Okay, can I have whipped cream on top with a caramel drizzle?
Okay, sure.
And then in the cup, can you also do a caramel drizzle in there?
Yeah.
Okay, and then I also want a chocolate croissant.
Gotcha.
And do you have powdered sugar?
We sure do.
Can you do like a dusting of powdered sugar or even just dunk the whole thing in the powdered sugar and just like roll it around a little bit?
Wow, lady, you really like your sugar. What are you, Jeff Goldblum or something?
Huh?
Jeff Goldblum, you know?
I'm a woman. I don't have a name. My name's not Jeff.
No, I know your name's not Jeff. You know, that guy, Jeff Goldblum, he's like the eccentric actor. He was in that movie, The Fly, and like he ate a bunch of sugar and stuff.
I don't know what you're talking about. I've never seen that movie.
You haven't seen it?
You haven't seen it.
No way.
You're out of order.
You're killing me, Smalls.
Fasten your seatbelts.
You're tearing me apart.
Houston, we have a problem.
What we've got here is failure.
God damn you all to hell!
Hello and welcome to You Haven't Seen It, the show where I make my wife watch movies that she doesn't care to see. Thank you for joining us. I'm your host, Joey.
And I'm your co-host, Aaron.
Yes, that is my wife.
Hi. And Joey, what movie are we going to watch today?
Well, we already watched it, but we are going to be talking about The Fly today.
Oh, The Fly.
It's kind of weird that you say what movie we're going to be talking about when you know good and well what movie we're going to be talking about.
Well,
maybe we ought to change up our intro a little bit. So, have you ever heard of this movie before you watched it?
I never knew about this movie until I met you. I think you've talked about this movie like two times before, but I didn't know anything about this movie.
Yeah, I talk about this movie a lot because I have an interesting background with it. The Fly is a 1986 movie by David Cronenberg. It was produced by Albert Brooks, which is very strange. I didn't know that until yesterday. And it was distributed by 20th Century Fox. The movie was made independently because 20th Century Fox didn't want to put the money up for it initially. That's when Albert Brooks came in and he decided he was going to produce the movie. It was made for $9 million and it grossed $60 million, at the box office, which is really pretty good for an independent horror movie. It was critically acclaimed and lauded for the special effects and Jeff Goldblum's performance, which is
really
very good. Yeah. What, you didn't like Jeff Goldblum's performance?
I have opinions.
Well, I can't wait to hear them. But my background with this movie is I saw it when I was way too young to see anything even close like this. I think I was about 8 years old. I know.
It's almost our daughter's age.
Yeah, that's almost our daughter's age. She would have nightmares if we showed this to her. But I know it was before Jurassic Park came out because I didn't know who Jeff Goldblum was. I would have recognized him from that. And that movie came out when I was 9. So I was probably like 8 years old when I saw all this. It just came on TV and it looked like a really cool sci-fi movie, you know? So I was just like, I'll watch this. I think it was on the TV and my dad was just working.
Yeah.
Because my dad was a workaholic and he would focus on what he was working on and he wouldn't pay attention to anything else. And this movie came on and I just went into the living room and watched it. And
that's how you watched most of your TV when you were younger, right?
No. I would stay up late after he went to bed a lot. Okay. And I would wait for him to leave. If he was at work, I could watch TV. But I wasn't really allowed to watch TV when he was around. But I saw this movie. I saw most of it. I think I tuned in like 20 minutes late or something. But all the gruesome body horror and special effects were
in the later part of the movie.
In the later part and the part where the guy breaks his arm in the arm wrestling thing.
Yeah.
And the bone came out, like, really chilled me to the bone. And that's pretty early on in the movie, but I remember seeing that.
I would say it's about halfway in the movie.
Yeah, I mean, it's in there, but I definitely remember seeing that. And I remember seeing the him, like, I think I saw the part with the stocking.
Okay.
I want to say I tuned in on the drive when they were driving back to his lab.
Oh, that's really early on.
Yeah, that's pretty early on. But I'm not sure. My memory's fuzzy. I do remember the very most gruesome parts of the movie still stick out in my head, and I remember not being able to sleep for like 2 weeks.
There was one point in the movie while we were watching this that you actually turned away because you didn't want to watch it.
Yeah,
you like, you were talking, you were like, this part in this movie is so visceral to me, and you turned your head away. Because like most of the time when we watch these movies, like especially like horror movies, Joey will watch and he'll like peek over at me, but then he'll go right back to the TV or the whatever it's playing on. But this, you like had your head turned straight forward because our couch is kind of perpendicular to the couch that you were sitting on. And you were just like, I'm not going to look at this. That's what I thought in my head. I was like, dear God, maybe it really did scar you.
Yeah, no, I turn into a little kid every time I watch this movie. And just to be clear, I love this movie. I think seeing that at a young age really molded me as someone who watches movies. Because you know how much
especially watching horror movies.
Yes, I love the horror genre for many, many years. Probably too many. I think there was a period of time where I only watched horror movies and almost nothing else.
Yeah.
But this movie really shaped me, and I really do turn into a little kid again whenever I watch it. It is very scary. And the part where he...
I would say if you're young and you watch this, it's very scary. But if you are older and you watch this, I think you would have a different opinion of it.
Why do you say that?
Well, because watching it now for the first time ever, I wasn't that scared of the movie. The movie wasn't that scary.
Well, you're not someone who'd be scared of movies, though.
I would say I get scared easily. But I think
you jump at movies, but you don't really. I don't feel like you're like a movie's ending. You're like, I don't know if I'm going to be able to sleep tonight.
Oh, well, I mean, yeah, but I wouldn't say that this movie was like give me nightmares. Like you were like, that's what I felt like you were saying like to me after the movie. You were like, do you think you're going to be okay? But like, it wasn't as scary as I thought it was going to be.
I might have played it up a little bit.
But I think also it was such a intense experience for you when you were younger. So when you think about the movie, you were like, oh my gosh, I was so terrified. But watching it as an adult, I was like, oh, okay, he's very disfigured and it's disgusting, absolutely gross. And most of the time, like, I can't even describe the face I made the whole movie, but I was just like this.
Yeah, her face is like scrunched up and confused at the same time.
Like grossed out, confused. But I wouldn't say it's like, it's definitely not a jump scare movie. So if you're like, I can't do jump scares. There's one jump scare when he jumps through the window. Mm-hmm. But other than that, everything else it's pretty tame. Like it's a slow progression of him turning into this fly. But it's not super duper scary. I'm not like, oh my God, this is going to happen.
You know? I mean, I guess too, since he's just in his lab, it's not like a Friday the 13th movie where he's stalking people and killing them. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I don't know, but it really scared me when I was a kid. It really did. I thought Jeff Goldblum was going to jump in the window.
Didn't you say you had a raccoon outside your house or something that would like scurry along? Maybe it was a possum.
Yeah, it was a possum, but... That was a different time. That wasn't when I was scared of this movie, but I would hear his little footsteps in the in the leaves that were accumulated outside my window every single night because he had a little habit trail.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, but yeah, that little possum. anyway, so the movie was made in 1986. I was 2 years old when it came out, and you were negative 7 years old?
Yes. Wait, when did Ferris Bueller's Day Off come on? The same year?
I think 1986. Wait, maybe I got that wrong. Yeah, this one came out in 1986.
Okay, yeah. So seven.
Okay.
I think that's the year Matt was born, my oldest brother.
The writer and director, David Cronenberg. Oh, okay. This movie is very much his movie. He didn't write the original script, but he got the script and he rewrote major portions of it. He directed it. It's really his baby. But the interesting thing was the guy who wrote it before, I think his last name was Pogue or something like that. Let me see if I can find it. Edward Pogue wrote...
There was a movie of this before this one?
Yeah, this is a remake of a 1958 movie.
Okay.
And I've seen that one, but I don't remember it, so I can't really talk about it. But Charles Edward Pogue wrote the screenplay, and then David Cronenberg got it, and he wanted to rewrite large portions of it. But then when the script went into arbitration, David Cronenberg insisted that they put Charles Pogue's name on it so that he could make money on it. I'm like, that's really nice. You don't hear stories like that coming out of Hollywood. Usually people like want all the credit for themselves, or they want their name put on a script that they didn't actually write.
Yeah.
Like a real, Stallone is always trying to get his name put on scripts that he barely wrote, you know? So I thought that was pretty cool. And then also, Albert Brooks is a guy who's known for comedy. You know who Albert Brooks is?
No, I don't.
You know, he wrote, Spaceballs probably, right?
Oh, yeah. I've never seen it, but I've heard of it.
Yeah. He's responsible for making Spaceballs, Blazing Saddles, History of the World Part 1, maybe Airplane. Like, he's responsible for some of the greatest comedies that have ever been made. And he was the producer for this movie.
And this movie was not funny at all.
No, this movie was not funny. I think that the one scene where the guy goes, "Watch out, he eats chocolate bars."
Yeah.
I don't know why I did that with a Boston accent. Hey, watch out, he eats chocolate bars.
That was the guy eats chocolate bars through this whole movie.
And then he breaks that dude's arm. But he didn't have his name on the movie because he didn't want people to think that it might be a comedy.
Yeah.
So I thought that was another interesting thing. Much like the script, it's, you know, who doesn't want their name put on a movie? A potentially
successful
one. Especially if you
helped with the movie a lot.
Yeah.
What did he do? He wrote it?
He was a producer.
Producer. Okay. Yeah.
So that's kind of the background of the movie. So let's get into what you thought of it and some of your notes.
Yeah. Well, can I see a picture of the director/writer? Because I have a note about him that I just want to see if it's true. Because this is just a thought in my head. When I was watching this movie, I was just like, this guy, do you have any like background on this?
On David Cronenberg?
Yeah, like what's his life been like or any kind of thing like that?
Why?
I don't know. Was he like nerdy in high school and like couldn't get the girl?
No, I don't know anything about David Cronenberg like that.
Because when I watched this movie, the only thought that came in my head, and well, one of the first thoughts that came in my head by how it's written is this director/writer is some guy that never got laid. He was nerdy, and this is his wet dream. Because the way that the women talk to him, or the way that, what's her name?
Gina Davis.
The way she talks to him is like, a woman wouldn't say that. You can tell that this is written by a man.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Absolutely.
I agree with that 100%.
100% written by a man who seems like he never got laid. But that's just my opinion.
Well, I don't know where you get the never got laid part of it, but I definitely see that it was written by a man. It for sure, like the way he just takes that one woman out of the bar after breaking that dude's arm, and she's like, "Yeah, sure, I'll hang out with you."
Well, because literally, both women were so easily like, oh yeah, I'll go in your car. Women don't do that. Men are scary.
Yeah, you're right.
So like, but, immediately
he went in her car.
He was in her car?
Oh, yeah, he doesn't drive because he has motion sickness. Did you even watch the movie?
But like, also, why are they going to his house so easily? Like, they're like, yeah, let's go to your house. But then later on, does he drive the woman to his place?
Yeah, well, here you're running into the problem of like, if movies were too realistic, they wouldn't happen. Because in real life, Gina Davis would have met him at that artistic art gallery, and then he would have been like, well, let me show you my experiment, and she would have just been like, no, I'm not going to your lab in the middle of the night. So then we don't have a movie at that point.
True, but also like, there are ways, like,
I hear,
it was very soon on where she was just like, when they first like had sex, they were just talking, and then she all of a sudden is like, you're cute. And then she like leans in on him and starts kissing him. And it was like, no, it grossed me out, to be honest, because I was like, if I was in this situation, I didn't relate to her at all because she was so forward with him and she moved quick.
Well, you'll see a problem with this era of filmmaking. Of course, all of it's written by men. All of it's produced by men. So you have a lot of female characters who are underdeveloped because besides being a journalist, I didn't know anything else about her. She felt very underdeveloped. But that's just a downside to this era of film and independent film. And
yeah. And like also, I think Gina Davis is a pretty good actress. But she gave the acting was one note for both of them, not just her. I got the second note whenever he started turning into a fly.
Mm-hmm.
But I felt that they were very stale and stagnant as characters. I wasn't invested in them at all. The motion sickness portion doesn't really make sense for this. Like, I didn't understand that at all. Like, I don't know why that's important.
That's why he wanted to make a teleportation machine so he didn't have to ride in cars anymore.
Okay.
I thought that was pretty clear.
No, not really.
But that's what I like about it. You're right. The acting is pretty one note.
Yeah.
Again, it's an independent film. It was probably, they were trying to make it very quickly.
Yeah.
There
were also moments where they like shot Gina in a very unattractive light. There was this one point where she was laying on a bed after they had sex, and the lighting on her made her look like an old hag. And she is not old in this. She's very young in this movie. The way that they shot her, like there were times where I was like, you look like a 10-year-old and then you look like a 50-year-old. I don't know if it was the way they lit her or the way that they did their makeup. Something was off about how they shot Gina.
Yeah, well, filmmaking is not perfect.
Yeah.
So you're going to have to let a few things like that slide. This movie probably could not afford to do reshoots or anything like that.
Okay.
But then again, why would they? There's mistakes in filmmaking. You can't get around it.
Also, like, this is the guy from Jurassic Park. Right?
Mm-hmm.
And he did a much better performance in Jurassic Park. I guess it was 94 that Jurassic Park came out?
93, I believe.
93. So 7 years later, he got better at acting. But this, I thought his acting was really bad.
I thought he did fine.
Especially in the beginning of the movie, like the way he was talking with his hands was like, put your hands down. Put your hands down, Jeff. Because
no, Jeff Goldblum is not going to put his hands down.
It was not like he was like theatrical with his hands, because I talk with my hands, but his was just like, my hands are here. I don't know what to do with them.
So the hand talking you do is good, but Jeff Goldblum can just go
clearly,
jump in the
lane. Clearly. No, it was just, they were there in the shot with him. And I was like, what are you doing with your hands? it was just an observation. And I don't know much about him as an actor. I've only seen him in those two things. I mean, I might have seen him in some other things.
You probably have seen him in some other
but
stuff.
But those are the most memorable for me. And from Jurassic Park, like, he wasn't like all, I'm hand talking. And his hands weren't awkwardly on screen. It might be because they couldn't refilm it
multiple times. Yeah, but also Jurassic Park was made by Steven Spielberg.
Yeah.
I think for an independent genre film, I think
it was great for
you're being way too hard on it for being an independent horror film. Like, there's the acting in horror films is never as good as like big budget A movies.
I'm not being harsh on it. I'm just what I saw from it, I just wrote down.
Right, I get it.
I didn't know that it was really low budget. I didn't know any of that. So, like, you saying those things, like, oh, okay, that's why. But my first impression of it, like, these are my very first impressions. I don't know anything about the show, and these are what I wrote down.
Okay. All right.
So, don't criticize me too much.
I'm not criticizing you. I'm just saying, like, these are kind of nitpicky things. Oh, one of the things that I really noticed about the movie was it didn't really stick to a three-act structure. It felt like 5-6 acts.
The movie felt so long.
Yes. I did notice that this time around. It's one of those old-fashioned, like, slow-build horror movies where it really doesn't kick off until the third act. But there wasn't a three clear acts. Like, I kept pausing it thinking, like, oh, is this an act break? Or thinking there should have been an act break by now. And then looking at the time, and it's like two-thirds.
Mm-hmm.
Of the movie is already gone, and it's like, where are we going?
Yeah.
But when it does the ending, when it kicks into high gear, when she goes there to tell him that she's is pregnant and that she wants to get an abortion, she can't go through with telling him. That's when it really does jump into high gear.
Oh, yeah.
The movie
after that
off.
Point, I was like, this is a fun movie to watch. Before that, I was like, if I'm being honest, I just felt the whole beginning of the movie was all exposition and, like, I don't know how to describe it. All of it was exposition, but it was also, like, lots of stuff felt skipped through. So, like, at the very beginning when, like, you first meet these two, they're already talking and it feels odd how the movie starts.
Oh, for sure, yeah.
And like, even like just their conversation just seems weird. Like, immediately she meets him and then immediately goes to his place. It was just, it moved really quickly, but also the movie felt forever long. I don't know why.
Yeah, it's just an old fashioned slow build type movie. Like, we watched Better Call Saul, and that show moves so slowly. It's such a slow burn. And it's really good because, like, so many shows that are out now are just like bam, bam, bam. Like,
but it doesn't feel like it takes forever.
Yeah, I know it doesn't feel like it. I'm just saying, like, this movie's from 1986. Movies are more quickly paced now. Mm-hmm. Except something that I saw recently, I finally saw Get Out, and Get Out was amazing. The whole first hour of it is just very slow, kind of boring. The Jordan Peele movie.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and man, it was really good. It felt like a very old-fashioned, like, slow-build horror movie.
Where they were,
movie.
Like, replacing their body with black people?
Yeah.
Yeah,
yeah. They were transplanting the brains of white people into black people. Yeah, so, Okay. Yeah, and man.
Yeah, I loved that movie.
It's really good.
When we watched that, I really enjoyed it.
But that's kind of what it's like, except in Get Out, it was a very clear three-act structure, but like, the movie starts out and you're like, oh, everything's great. You know, this guy's got a cool girlfriend. They're going to go to their parents' house. Their parents are nice, but they're a little weird. They don't know what to say. And then even weirder people start showing up at the house. And then the beginning of the third act, they just spill all the beans about what's happening. And then you're like, that guy's got to get out. But that's what this movie is, and that's what a lot of horror movies from that era were like. The very first hour was an extremely slow build.
It was extremely slow.
Yeah.
Almost boringly slow.
All right.
Because that's the difference between like Get Out and like Better Call Saul is even though it's a slow build, all of the things that they're showing or like getting into are so important to the story, but also interesting. I feel like there were times in this movie, it was like, I didn't know, I need to know that they had sex 50 million times. There was a lot of sex in this movie.
Yes, there was a lot of sex
in this movie. And it was like a little repetitive.
No,
like,
but I disagree. I think that everything they showed in the movie pushed the movie forward or showed you something and told you something about what's going on. Or like character development.
Can you explain how?
I can't think of an example right off the top of my head, but everything seemed to push the movie along. Like her having sex with him after he transports.
That makes sense. Like whenever like she was like, I can't do this anymore. I'm tired. And she was like, we've been doing this for hours. Like that was a good moment to see them having sex. Like, have them do it one time before, one time after, we're good. We don't need to see every single time they do.
Oh my God, you're part of this whole generation that doesn't want sex scenes in the movies anymore.
I mean, there can be sex scenes, no, but it was a little much.
No, there's all these people now like keep sex scenes out of movies.
Are there people like that?
I don't know. I've heard about that, but I really do. In it, these little other subtle things, I noticed this time around, like. She says, why do you always wear the same clothes? Do you ever change your clothes?
Yeah.
And he's like, oh, I just wear the same thing. But then after...
I don't have to think about it.
Yeah. But after he goes through the transporter and his DNA is mixed with a fly DNA...
He starts wearing other things.
Yeah. He never wears that suit ever again. He doesn't even wear it, any item of those clothes ever again. It's not that he wears something different. It's just like saying the old him is gone.
Yeah.
There is no more... Seth Brundle.
Wow, good job, Joey, looking at the costumes and everything. Joey, before we watched this movie, Joey made a statement, because I do theater, and I love costumes. I love working with costumes, and I love doing costuming for our shows. But Joey was like, I didn't really notice costumes until I started watching shows with you, because I comment on costumes, because I think costumes are very important and very helpful in completing a story and telling the story. We saw a musical recently and I was like, the costumes didn't work. And he was like, I think they're fine. But with this movie, like that costume detail, the costumes were fine. Like I didn't have any issue with the costuming or like how the costume told the story. They didn't distract me, which is good because I get distracted with the costumes a lot.
Yeah, the costuming in this wasn't bright and poppy at all.
Very simple. But
there was
still
a lot of shoulder pads, I noticed.
I didn't notice that. Like, I when I was watching the movie, I wasn't like, oh my God, look what they're wearing.
Yeah, but that was the one like big 80s thing. I'm like, there's some big shoulder pads on this.
There were a lot of trench coats.
A lot of jackets in this
Lots
movie.
Of jackets and trench coats.
Yeah.
It was probably cold in
Toronto. Yeah, it was Toronto.
One of the things that I was like, it was not the acting, because, well, I mean, it was partly acting, but I guess directing of it, like, when she wakes up after they've had sex again, and he's flipping over the bars and, like, doing gymnastics on a chair and in the air and all over the place, and she's just, like, looks at him and's like, she almost is smiling. And it's like she's turned on by this. And if I saw you in the middle of the night in our house flipping over things and jumping all, I'd be like, what the fuck is wrong with you? There is something wrong. I wouldn't be like, oh, yeah, baby. That's what it seems like.
Oh, okay.
Because literally immediately after that, she like goes up to him and like touches him. And then I think they go do it again.
I don't know. I don't know if they did it again after that. It was pretty weird. I think they were just looking for a way to illustrate like that he's changing.
Yeah.
Because the whole thing is, it's kind of like drug addiction. Like when you first start doing meth and you're like, wow. I've done so much meth. No, I've heard stories about people doing meth and they're like, oh, I got so much done today. My house is so clean. Oh, drop my microphone. people will be getting all this stuff done, and they're like, well, this is a miracle drug. And then, like, cut to a few weeks later, and then
they're pounding that shit back every day.
Yeah, well, that, like, their life is in complete shambles, and all they're thinking about is getting meth at that point. But that's a lot. Like, that was still in that phase of that. And then when he brings that woman home from the bar, and they're done having sex again, he's there gripping his stomach and, like, kind of feeling ill.
Yeah, but it was just, the directing choice was weird to me. Because, like, you could, she already knew, like, she was like, wow, like, you're drinking a lot of sugar. Like, you want some coffee with that sugar? I think she says something to that extent. And then, like, she sees other things. She feels the hair. She cuts them off. And then she sees him flipping in the I guess it's the living room, a living area. He's flipping all over this warehouse. And she's, like, smiling, like, oh, wow. If I were to direct that, I would have been like, okay, let's try something else. Because her reaction, I'm not talking about the scene. I'm talking about that reaction that she had is odd and weird. Especially because she was already like, what's going on?
Well, she's going through all these changes with him in the movie. So later when she comes back and he's starting to change for the worse, you know, she's worried about him and all that. So she's excited that the experiment is working. So I would say that that's pretty good directing, because you still want her to be happy about it and not upset that things have gone wrong just yet. Because this is about, she's getting a big story about this. Like, she's thinking in her head, you know, I'm going to win awards for writing about this.
I feel like after she finds him, once they make the monkey go actually through, I think she's like, I've got my story, but I love this man. And she doesn't, like, the extra things that are happening around him, like him being like high sex drive, into sugar. I mean, I guess what else? Starting to grow weird hairs. she's curious. Like, because whenever she talks about the coffee, she's like, what is going on? And then later on, she even says, like, there's something wrong. Something went wrong. Before he even, like, I think his makeup changed for the first time, where he's starting to, like, his face is starting to look like, it looked kind of bruised or something.
Yeah.
I don't know what they were trying to go with. It was just like splotchy. Like, his skin
is dying. It kind of seemed like to me.
It just looked splotchy. Yeah. But it started subtle, which I will say, okay, it was subtle. I don't know what they were trying to go for, but it was subtle.
Well, how would you do it if someone was turning into a fly? I mean,
I would have given them, like, whiskers, like weird whiskers all over them and not just in their wound.
Yeah. Well, he had them coming out of his face.
Later.
But it was right after that. And he goes in there with a little trimmer to try to trim them up.
Yeah. But also, even after that, or even before that, the way that they did the makeup, it just looked like they took a round, like, sponge and just, like, dabbed him on the face. Like, it was just... I would have done the makeup differently. I'm glad that they did makeup to try to make him look. I appreciate that. Mm-hmm. But I would have done it differently. I would have done the makeup application differently.
Okay.
Is what I'm saying. Maybe, like, giving him, like, seeing his veins, so his skin looks like it's getting, like, transparent, could have been cool. So, like, maybe his veins are kind of popping out because his skin is, like, dying and his veins are like, please, no, say. I don't know.
Okay.
There's options. Anyways. Also, whenever he got mad at her, whenever she was like, I don't know. I can't remember exactly what moment. Like, but he's, like, walking out of the building. Oh, it's when he goes to find the tramp. Mm-hmm. The tramp lady. Tanya?
Tina? Yeah, she's just like a barfly.
Yeah.
I wouldn't call her a tramp.
There's one part where he goes... She goes, what do I look like, a hooker? It's like, wasn't he looking for a hooker?
No.
Okay. That's what it seemed like.
He wanted to steal another man's woman.
Oh.
Which is what he did in that scene.
Well, whenever he went out and, like, left her, like, she was like, I don't have that much of a drive. I can't do this. Because she was like, I don't want to get in the get in the chamber. I don't want to get. And he was like, I'll find someone that can keep up with me. So it's like, keep up sexually? Because that sounds like a hooker to me. Anyways, whatever she is, I know she's not a hooker, but whenever he's like leaving his place, he like jumps up and hits a lamp like a 13-year-old boy. And then immediately what I thought, I was like, these women are so eager to go to this guy's place. Like she was like, I'm going to go home with this Joe guy. I think his name was Joe. I'm going to go home with Joe tonight. And then he breaks his arm and she's just like, okay, let's go.
Yeah, that was.
And then they're like walking down the street. Very strange. Walking down the street and she's like, let's go to another bar. He's like, fine, we'll go to another bar. And they don't even go to another bar. They just go back to this house.
No, there's some time passage. It's night. And then when they finally get to his place, it's like the morning time.
Okay, I didn't notice that.
Yeah, they went to other bars. And he wasn't annoyed that she wanted to go to other bars. He's like, yeah, we can go.
Well, he seemed annoyed.
Yeah.
I thought he just was like, I want to get you back to my place so I can put you in my chamber.
No, that wasn't the case. But I think it is kind of strange that he took her over there and just immediately is like, oh, I'm gonna get in here. And
I'm going to show you.
I'm going to show you this. And then she's like, what are you, some type of magician?
I know. Also, whenever he steps out of that, he just walks over to her with his dick in her face and is like, here it is.
No, Jeff Goldblum is very tall, apparently.
Well, she was in a chair.
Yeah, I know, but still.
Also, like,
so if you were sitting down in a chair and he was standing up, you would just constantly be a dick height, dick to face height. Well, because I just think the whole scene with Tawny is just really interesting, that he would go and the first thing he would do, well, I don't know, maybe it wasn't the first thing they did, because she is in her underwear, mm-hmm, with that jean jacket covering her boobs. So what do you think they did before that?
I mean, they probably already had sex. They probably already had sex.
So that was like his post-coital.
Yeah.
Well, what do you think he was thinking before, when he's like, all right, we're going to do it, and then I'm going to go transport myself?
He's probably like, hey, there's this really cool thing I can do. You want to do it too? So
you think he thinks, I'm going to get in this thing, teleport, and then she's going to want
to
do it too.
Well, she's, because he wants her to do it so that he can be less fly.
Right.
That's the whole point of this. Like, the reason he pulls Gina back in is,
at this point, he hasn't figured out that he's part fly yet.
Yeah, he has. He has. And he tells Gina, I want you to get into the, he wants her to get into the pods with him so that it can split him back up into,
that's at the very end.
He wants her to go away with him and use the pod. There's a reason he wants her to use that pod, because he wanted Gina to do it first and she said, no, I'm scared. And then he leaves to go find her.
I just
find
think
Tana.
It's, I'll use the drug analogy again. Like, this drug is making him feel really good and euphoric, and he wants someone else to do it. He wants somebody else to do the drug work.
That is why he wanted her to do it. He's like, I feel amazing. You'll feel amazing too.
Yeah. Because that's what he said with Gina Davis. And then when this...
Yeah.
Like,
I think I was mixing up the double fusion thing.
Yeah. But I don't think he's even figured out that he's fly yet. Gina Davis hasn't come back with those test results yet. Had she?
No, because whenever Gina Davis comes back in and says that line of like, be afraid, be very afraid, then Tawny leaves, and then she tells him like, I took it to the lab. I took those hairs to a lab. It wasn't human. It was
insect or something.
Possibly insect.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what happened. So did you notice how I'm going back a little bit, sorry, but did the guys at the bar seem really Canadian to you?
No.
No,
they didn't seem particularly Canadian.
Well, it's funny because in Canada, they say chocolate bar, but here in the U.S., we say candy bars.
Oh.
So one of the guys goes, oh, he's been eating chocolate bars.
So, like, any kind of candy bar is a chocolate bar?
Yeah, I guess
so. If it's got chocolate on it?
That's just what I read online.
Oh.
But I did, I'm like, yeah, people do say candy bars here.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know anybody who says chocolate bar?
I mean, if they're talking about, like, just a chocolate bar.
Okay.
But
because you come from a family that says icebox.
And a couple is more than two.
A couple is as many as you want. Okay, so what were we?
I was trying to say that I think the reason he was like, I'm going to show Tawny me going through so she can see it's okay and safe for her to do it, but also I have to get naked and like, because then they do it again.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, he has an insatiable sexual appetite at this point.
Yeah, they might not have already had sex because she had underwear on.
Uh-huh.
And like, if you're like,
maybe they were just dancing around in their underwear.
Maybe. I mean, I think that's possible. Like, they may be like dry humped, and then they were like, oh yeah, let's do it now, finally.
Okay, so he's brought her home.
Also,
they dry humped and danced around naked. He says, hey, I got to show you this thing.
It's really
cool.
And
you're for sure going to want to have penetrative sex with me after you see me do this.
Mm-hmm.
And she does.
Yeah.
And then
they don't even take her underwear off.
No, they don't even take it off. I don't know how that would work, but they don't take it off.
I mean, you can pull it to the side, I guess.
Okay, so then Gina Davis shows up. Did you think that was funny or weird when he's like, oh, this is my mother?
Yes. Well, I mean, because earlier Tanya says, like, oh, I can't go to my place. I live with my mother.
Oh, that's
and then so
right.
Then he says, oh, well, like, I also live with my mother. This is her.
Yeah. Do you think he's saying that because, like, Gina Davis is, like, keeping tabs on him or, like, mothering him? Or is it just to call her old?
I think it's, like, she's keeping tabs on him. And, like, I think she's, like, I'm not going to go through this teleportation thing because you seem off and you need to get tested. Because she tells him, like, something's wrong before... Yeah. He says, you need to go through it.
Yeah, before they have their little breakup.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, the last time I was just thinking when he said that, it's like, oh, is he just calling her old?
No.
Like, no, but I think you're right. Also, hey, let's get into her boyfriend a little bit.
Yeah.
Or her ex-boyfriend, I mean.
Yeah, so it's her boss.
It's her boss /
and
ex-boyfriend.
They portray him very creepily.
Yes.
There's even one line where he says, if she dies, does he have permission to clean the body?
Yes. He is very, very creepy. And you can tell it's very much on purpose.
Yeah.
And he just seems like the kind of guy where, like, you say, I'm going to the bathroom. He's like, can I watch?
Ugh. Gross.
But he has a really interesting character arc
and
at the end of the movie.
And he comes back to save her. I wish they would have done it. I wish they would have done it in a little bit of way. So whenever he comes in at the end and he saves her, I'm not like, he was an asshole, but he saved her. Like, I wanted to care for him a little bit more.
Right. Yeah.
So that whenever he does save her, I'm like, oh, she should have chose him.
Yeah. I don't think the movie wants you to be like, oh, now they can get back together.
Yeah.
I think they wanted to redeem him in a way.
Well, maybe, but also, like, he was so creepy, and then
he's kind of irredeemable in a way.
Yes, and then they come in, and he tries to redeem himself, but, like, it's a little too late.
Yeah, I totally agree with you, 100%.
Because he is really, like, the whole time is very creepy. He creeps on her. He goes to her apartment, like, because he's got a key.
Follows her around. And
yes, he follows her, and he's like, oh, you... there was one point where she was in a clothing store getting a leather jacket.
It was like a department store.
Yeah. And
getting,
like,
a jacket. This movie has so many jackets.
Yeah. And I don't know what he says exactly, but something along the lines of he has a big dick.
Oh, I don't remember that.
Yeah. He's like talking about Jeff.
That's right. He's saying, like, does he have a big dick or something?
Yeah.
Yeah. I really love that scene in the department store. It mm-hmm. really, if you've ever had a fight with a boyfriend or a girlfriend or an ex, like, in public,
mm-hmm.
how embarrassing it is. Has that ever happened
to
you?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that's probably happened to everybody at least once. But it's very embarrassing. But you're so mad in the moment that you can't just be like, we'll talk about this later.
Yeah.
Yeah, that dude was super creepy. And I don't think that he was supposed to be redeemed in the end of the movie. I just think it was like an interesting, it was supposed to be like an interesting juxtaposition and be like, you think that guy was an abusive dick? Like the fly is literally like trying to force her to have a baby and fuse together with him and stuff like that. And you're supposed to think back and be like, well, maybe he was just a little hurt that the relationship was over and he really was in love or something like that.
I feel like that's what they're trying to go for, but I hate him. I hate that guy.
It's totally, I'm with you. I hate him too.
I feel like if they wanted him to be redeemable, like they could have done something that made him a little less creepy. Like maybe he like goes to her apartment and maybe he like follows her around to keep tabs, like to make sure she's okay. And they could have done it in a way that it's like, oh,
instead of out of jealousy.
Exactly. Yeah. Which he seemed very jealous. Yeah. And there's even a part where she's like, are you jealous? Or like, there's a lot of jealousy in this whole movie.
Yeah.
Like even with Jeff, like whenever she leaves to go say like, stop messing with me, that he's like all super jealous and she's like gone for one night and she comes back the next night and it's like, I'm here. He's like, oh, I already went through.
Yeah.
I already went through the teleportation pod.
Well, here's another thing about this movie that kind of,
I feel like he had no consideration for her at all in that moment.
No, none. What's interesting about this movie that I noticed this time around that I was actually I realized I never paid attention to it because I love this movie so much. I'm just in it and I'm there and I'm not thinking about stuff. But I looked online and the movie takes place over 4 weeks, I think. What was it? 4 months. Damn, now I can't remember. But anyway, it's a long time for a movie.
Mm-hmm.
We just watched Ferris Bueller's Day Off. That's movie, one day. Less than a day. It's daytime. Like he wakes up in the morning, pretends to be sick, and he has to be back home before his parents get home from work.
Yeah.
At 6 o'clock. So it's like 12 hours.
Mm-hmm.
This movie takes place over weeks, months, maybe. And like, that's a long time. So I think they were having trouble being like, well, how long does she stay gone? Should she come back and stuff like that?
Also, I don't know a way that they could have done. I wish they could have shown a little bit more about like the timeline, because from the very first time she met him, it seemed like almost like that same night she was making out with him and they were having their first experience of sex together.
Yeah.
But I don't know if it was, because when I was watching it, I was like, what is this timeline? Because I didn't know what the timeline was.
Yeah, the timeline.
It seemed very quick at first. Like everything was happening like so fast because it felt like they were like, we need to get this story out. Like, we need to get to the point of him being a fly, partially fly.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was a lot of the first part was kind of rushed through.
Yeah, I agree.
And maybe if it was taken a little bit slower or like, I don't know how they would.
Yeah, that's what you're talking through right now is probably they were just having trouble with it themselves because the movie takes place over such a long period of time.
Mm-hmm.
That's always hard when you do that. So they're just like, well, should she come back the very next night?
And stuff.
So I understand what you're saying completely. Oh, so I remember when we were watching it and you were kind of confused. The part where she goes to have the abortion. And
yeah, I thought whenever she went to the abortion clinic and she was like in the wheelchair and then she goes on the table and there's blood everywhere. And it was like, wait, they haven't even done the abortion. And there's blood everywhere. I was like, oh my God, what did they do to her?
Oh, well, I've never been in a room while an abortion was happening.
I don't think it's that bloody.
I don't think so either. Especially like her belly was flat.
Yeah.
As flat as a pancake. And they're like,
well,
like,
I mean, of course. Yeah. But the larva that came out was huge.
Is that what
you were about to say?
No, I was just saying, like, if you're that early in a pregnancy, I don't think, there wouldn't be that much blood and there wouldn't be that many people around.
Yeah.
And then,
I mean, there's several nurses. There's anesthetic nurses. Yeah.
But like I said, I've been in the room for one time when someone was giving birth and that person was you.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know anything about how an abortion
How many go. People were in that room?
Oh, a bunch.
Okay.
But you were like a full-term baby you were delivering.
That larva looked full-term.
Yes, it did. That was a
large. And how was she so flat? Such a flat stomach with that huge ass larva in her stomach. But I mean, if she was going that early in, like a couple weeks in, she would be very, she wouldn't have a bump at all to get an abortion.
Of course. Yeah.
But I then mean, whenever it like popped up, that was a dream. I was like, okay. She's just like over.
Yeah.
I thought that was, I thought that dream sequence was done pretty well. Actually.
Yeah. Oh, I really like the dream sequence and the way they kind of trick you a little bit, but I wish there was more dreaminess to it. Like,
yes,
the doctor happened to be my mom, but you know, the doctor didn't look like my mom, but I knew it was my mom. And then all of a sudden, I was on a subway and I was still getting the abortion. It was, I really think they should have done something like that,
Or maybe just give it some haze or something, to make it feel dreamy.
Oh, yeah,
because literally, I was like, wait, did she go to the abortion clinic or not?
Yeah.
Because I was confused when she woke up and I was like, did she already have the abortion? I was very confused.
Uh-huh.
If it was just like, maybe they didn't get the baby all the way out.
That probably, your confusion probably had something to do with the timeline being such a slinky type, you know? I totally understand that. Yeah. And then when she goes back to actually get the abortion, you know who the doctor is?
Who is the doctor?
David Cronenberg, the director.
Oh, okay.
So I want to get your perspective on like the conversation they had in the office. And, you know, the guy is like, well, we have the father of the baby is deformed and all that. And, like, well, her ex or her boss or whatever is doing most of the talking at first. And
well, I feel it's fitting for the 80s. Because abortion was only made legal a decade before. Yeah. Maybe a little bit more, maybe a little less.
I think a little over a decade, yeah.
And so if a woman is going into an abortion clinic and there's a man with her, the man is probably going to do most of the talking because that's that kind of patriarchy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so I think
also the even
the doctor asks, the doctor asks, is it your baby? And he goes, no, it's not. And the doctor probably, he seemed like he knew her boss.
Yeah, I think it was.
Because like, how could he have just called someone in the middle of the night and they'd be like, yeah, I'll come up.
Yeah. And also this is, it takes place in the U.S. I was going to say it's Canada, but they only filmed it in Canada. Mm-hmm. But yeah, he asked like, it's a male doctor and he asked questions about it and stuff, and I like the part where she's just like, I just need an abortion, and like, you don't need to know anything, just give me the damn abortion, like that. I like that part.
I like that, but they still didn't well, I mean, they were gonna go through with it, but then she got kidnapped. But I feel like in that time period, like, it would have been very strange for her to get an abortion in the middle of the night.
Yes.
Because, and I think the only reason that they did it is because she was like, if you don't do it, I'll do it myself.
Yeah.
And they were like, oh shit, we got to do something. Okay. Mm-hmm. But, I wasn't alive in the 80s, so I don't know exactly like how stigmatized abortion was then. I bet it was more stigmatized than it is now. There's a lot of people that are against it, there's more people that are for it than against. So, like, in the 80s, I bet it was not like that because it was very new. I mean, I guess it's not super new, but it was new-ish. It was within 10, a little bit more than 10 years.
I don't know what year Roe v. Wade started, so I couldn't tell you.
But I think that in that time period, people have been like, oh, I think if my mom would have watched that movie, she would have been like, oh my gosh, at the abortion part.
Yeah, I think
my mom's very conservative, so.
Yeah, she's a lovely lady, though.
She's very sweet, lovely woman. A little conservative.
Yeah, so then he crashes in through the window, which is the part of the movie that scared me the most when I was a kid.
Yeah.
No, wait, actually, it might have been the part where he throws up on the guy's hands. Leg and stuff.
That's gross.
Yeah, that part's really
it
gross.
It looked really cool, though.
Oh, it looked really good. Those were the good special effects.
Once he started turning into, like, a disgusting, like, deformed fly thing, that was really cool. I loved not even, like, at the very end when he's a fly, like as his transformation, once his like once they started putting prosthetics on and his things like his ear fell off and his teeth were falling out and his fingernails. I was like, that's really cool. Also, do flies jizz out of their fingertips?
When he pulls it off?
Yeah, and then he starts spraying the mirror.
I think it was just supposed to be pus.
Oh, okay, okay. But I thought that was really cool. That, like, the special effects on that were really cool, and I that, liked that
the fingernail thing got... Have you ever ripped off a fingernail or something like that?
I've pulled them up to where they're half on.
Where they, like, bleed and stuff. Yeah. Like, that really, like, made my fingers hurt. Yeah. Because being a mechanic, I've smashed my hand so many times and stuff. Yeah, that really got to me. And I think all the stuff with, like, his teeth falling out looked really good.
Yeah.
The way he talked and, like, twitched when he became a fly.
Really I feel like at the beginning of the movie, his acting was very flat. But then when he became the fly, I felt like he improved in acting. I don't, and maybe it was directing, like.
I think it was just the certain movies, sometimes they're just like, you know, the director doesn't want anybody to go above a 5 or something. I don't know why, but like M. Night Shyamalan.
I don't know any of those movies.
He's a director, but he directed The Sixth Sense.
Oh, but okay. I've seen that.
He directs people, really amazing actors, but he's always like, hey, bring it down, bring it down. Everybody's so monotone in his movies and stuff. And I think that's what they were going for in the beginning of the movie.
Okay. Because it was very monotone, flat.
Yes.
But then when he became the fly, he was much more energetic. And, well, I mean, the energetic helped with it. But also, I think what was better was, like, I don't know what his objective was. Like, I don't know what he wanted anymore. But
That's something like in the beginning of the movie, you're like, this guy is really dead set on
one thing. Yeah. He wants this thing.
Yeah, he wants this thing. And then once he becomes the fly. But I mean, if you were turning into a fly.
Yeah.
So it's kind of good and it's kind of mushy. I don't know.
But I would say I preferred, I like the second half of the movie more than the first half.
Okay.
Because I feel like once he starts becoming the fly, like his body starts changing, I feel like that's maybe it's because that's when the movie picks up.
Yeah, it really is.
And so that's what got me more interested in the movie. Like the first half, I was just like, oh my gosh, when are they going to get to him being a fly?
Yeah, even every time I watch it again, that's why I'm just like, I'm waiting for that first big transformation where he walks out with the canes.
Yes.
And he's like throwing up on him. There's an interesting...
When he throws up on the donut, he's like, that's gross.
Yeah, it's like, what? You didn't... But when his ear falls off, Gina Davis didn't know that was going to happen. So her reaction was real in that moment.
It looked real.
Yeah.
It looked disgusting. The ear falling off and then his skin falling off whenever he's in the end actually the like being this weird fly thing. I thought that was really good.
Yeah. I thought the puppetry of the final fly form at the end, I thought that was really good. It looked like a real creature to me.
Yeah.
Yeah. Those puppets, they always move kind of slow. That's the one thing that really gets me about stuff like that. It's like they just don't move fast enough. Yeah. Oh, another little funny thing that I read about was if you look on IMDb, on the trivia and stuff, they're always like, such and such was considered for the role and blah, blah, blah was considered for the role or someone who was talked to. And there's a ton of them that are like, they approached, what's her name from Terminator? Linda Hamilton. They approached Linda Hamilton about being in the movie, but she said it sounded too gross. Like, it's just, there's like 5 different people who are like, I don't want to do the movie. It's disgusting. I thought that was pretty funny.
Yeah. The this other thing is with this baboon that's in the movie, there's 2 baboons. He kills the first one.
Yeah.
I'm wondering, was there a third one that he found this out with? Because whenever they're eating like lunch at a diner, she goes, well, what was the first time like? And he goes, it's too disgusting to say while we're eating, but it's worse than your burger. And it's like burgers are delicious.
Yeah.
Like if you like put a monkey in there and then it came out with a burger, I'd be like, I'm just kidding. No, I would not eat that burger. But
teleportation burger. Yeah.
But was there a third monkey that he put in there?
So you're saying that there's one that happened
before the movie.
Oh, before the timeline of the movie.
Because he knows when he meets her that he can't put organic matter in.
Then he tried again with the second monkey.
Yes.
Excuse me, baboon. And then there's the third one who actually does work.
Teleport.
Yeah.
Where is he keeping these monkeys?
I want to know where he gets them. Baboons are wild animals. They're not domesticated.
I mean, they seem to like... I mean, they seemed a little bit domesticated.
Well, they're trained.
Yeah.
But like, I guess baboons are very aggressive.
Yes.
And I've heard about using them on other movie sets, and you can't make eye contact with them because they'll take that as a sign of aggression. Yeah.
Oh my God.
And then I read for this movie that Jeff Goldblum's like 6'4 or something. He's a really, tall guy. Yeah. And the baboon on set.
Really tall for an actor.
One of the baboons on set, or maybe all, well, they only used one.
Uh-huh.
But.
Impossible.
Because he was so big, the baboon saw him as the alpha or whatever.
Oh.
And didn't want to mess with him. And it made things better on set. And it made the baboon less likely to attack women on set.
Oh.
Or not attack, but like get upset.
Less likely, but it still happened.
Yeah, but we don't talk about that. Okay. Yeah, I just want to know where he got those from, because you can't just go pick one up from the zoo, you know?
It must have, because there was a lab that was helping pay for things, and he was like, "Oh, I don't charge that. It doesn't cost that much to do of this." And so a college is like funding him.
That's right.
Is that college giving him random baboons to test on?
Yeah.
God, PETA would have a fit.
Yeah. And they said like he doesn't cost a lot of money, so they don't really bother him that much. Mm-hmm. So when he showed up to get a baboon, they're like, "Who are you? You want another baboon? What are you doing with these things, man?" All right, get out of here. You big old lug. So the ending, he's made a third pod.
Yeah.
And he's
he already had the third pod because first pod was clunky.
That's right.
And then he made these other two
Clunky, Dunky, and Dory. Those are the names of the pods.
Clunky, Dunky, and Chunky.
Clunky, Dunky, and Chunky. So he's putting all the pods together, and he's written a program to fuse
the second two pods to the first pod.
Yes. But what his idea is to fuse Gina Davis.
Or any other human.
Well, no, he wants, now that he knows that she's pregnant.
Yeah, so that they can be a family of three.
Yeah, and it's just, I think he wants to destroy everything. He wants to destroy himself and his family in some weird type of way. The motivation isn't super clear, but he knows he's going to kill all of them.
Yeah.
Right? So.
He had to have.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know how they would go through that and not come out more disfigured.
Right. Yeah. So I have no idea.
And
what
she's, she's going to be gone, or she might be the main part where it's her thoughts, but she's just deformed.
Right.
Do you know what I mean? Cause like that fly that came out, like we don't hear about this fly at all.
Yeah. What happened to the fly? Is he turning into a human?
I know. Little baby human. He's running around like, "Hey guys,
guys, I can't fly anymore. Help me out, guys. My legs are getting all fleshy.
My hair's falling out."
Oh, God. I want to see that movie. The Human.
The Human.
It was crazy, man. I was just flying around, and this guy got in this big pod, and I couldn't figure out how to get out. There was this clear thing in front of me. I could see through it, but I couldn't go through it.
And then there was this bright light.
And then there was a bright light.
And then everything changed. I was so tired. So, I couldn't do flips in the air anymore.
So he's going to transform all into one thing. And like at that point, I'm just thinking he's completely gone mad. He's like Jeffrey Dahmer, "I'm going to make a sex zombie in my apartment."
Oh.
Crazy at that point, right? And then her boss slash ex-boyfriend shows up with a shotgun to try to save her. And mm-hmm. he throws up on his hand and his leg and like melts the hand on the leg. That looked pretty good, didn't it?
Yeah. The special effects in this movie were really good.
Yeah.
I don't know about all the makeup in it, but the special effects were really cool.
Yeah.
And like the vomit looked like he was vomiting.
The vomit was just made up of like honey and sugar, and it was like three different ingredients. They probably just made it like from froth services or something.
Oh. They probably like frothed it up, and because it looked really like bubbly and like,
yeah,
they looked probably like, did. It looked like melted, or like it looked kind of like egg whites, but like not like super thick egg whites, not like whipped egg whites to like a, do you know what I mean? Do you know what whipped egg like egg whites look like?
Sort of.
Okay. Not like, not a
not
stiff
fully
peak.
Whipped because
not a stiff peak or a soft
it's
peak,
not
like
meringue
in between.
Yet.
Not a meringue.
Okay.
But like it looked really frothy.
Yeah. It looked really
frothy.
Good. It looks like acidic puke.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then Gina Davis jumps in and saves him and tells him to stop. And then they go through the teleportation device, and he like his body fully breaks off, and like he's this big fly puppet thing.
Yeah,
I thought that was really cool. And then he goes through the portal. The guy shoots it. He wakes up at the last minute and shoots the thing, so Gina Davis won't be go through the portal with him.
He shoots the cord on the floor.
Yeah,
so that it won't transport her.
Yeah.
And so the fly is in the transportation, the second one, and he breaks the glass because he sees that hers is broken now.
Uh-huh.
And then when he's halfway out, the teleportation
pod right.
goes.
He's halfway out.
And then he goes to the first clunky pod. And is he inside out? I was kind of confused about like how it
looks like he
him.
Got fused with some electronics or something. Because he has like a long tail hose, like it's a hose.
I didn't see that.
And he had some weird things sticking out of his back. It's hard to tell, but he definitely combined with something else.
Okay.
He didn't just teleport. And I think they're trying to figure out like, well, if Gina Davis is out of the picture, won't he just teleport to the next thing and he'll still be the same?
Yeah.
So they're like, oh, let's throw some other stuff on him to be like he combined with it. And then he.
Well, because maybe he was like touching something on the floor.
Yeah.
And he combined with it, I guess.
I guess so. Yeah. Anyway, it looked cool as hell, I thought.
Yeah.
And then he
gets. I knew he was different when he came out of the third pod.
Yeah.
But I didn't know how he was different.
I'm not sure if I still know how. But Gina Davis to kill him. He points the gun at mm-hmm. his own head. And she does
with
it.
With the claw.
Yeah. But she does it, and then boom, credits. It doesn't let you know anything.
I thought someone killed him.
No, yeah, she does it. She pulls the trigger.
Oh, she pulls the trigger.
She shoots him.
She's because she's like, I can't do it. I can't do it.
Yeah.
And then she does. Because I heard the gunshot. I think I was taking a note at that point.
Yeah.
But I didn't see, like, when he died.
Yeah, it kind of happens, like she pulls a trigger, but the gun is behind his head, I think. Mm-hmm. But anyway, they just roll credits after that. They're just like, you don't need to know anything else that goes on.
Yeah.
So, do you like the ending?
I liked the movie halfway through. So once he started changing, like that.
No, just the ending. What did you think of them, like, it ending so abruptly?
Oh, just like killing him and she's just like. I'm wondering, did she get the baby out?
Uh-huh.
I'm also wondering, did the other guy survive? Because it was just his hand and his leg.
Yeah.
He actually, you can be amputated and be okay.
Yeah.
You know?
Mm-hmm. So, I do know this. There's a sequel that I never saw, but he's the only actor who returns.
Oh.
And he's got a prosthetic hand and foot in it.
Okay.
So, he did survive. But usually with a movie like this, they have some sort of like 2-3 minute epilogue to where it's like, everything's great again, you know?
Oh, yeah.
But this one is just like, no, we're going to leave you on the most sour note we possibly can. And I liked it. Yeah, I think it works. Like, you want to walk out of the theater feeling pretty garbagey after a movie.
Which I appreciate, because there's a lot of movies where it's just like, that person should have died.
Yeah.
And they didn't. Like, just kill them.
Yeah.
It makes me think of Rent. So, like, the musical, if you've never seen this, okay. Mimi dies at the end of the musical, but she doesn't die in the movie. And people are like, she should have died.
She doesn't die in the movie?
No.
Oh, yeah. No, I don't.
I might also be wrong about this and just be like, in the musical, she doesn't die. I'm pretty sure she doesn't. I'm pretty sure she dies in the musical.
I don't like it when, like, the source material has something like that, and then they make a movie or something like that afterwards, and they're just like, oh, that's too depressing. We're going to take it out. It's like, no,
yeah.
That's why people like it. Oh, okay.
Yeah, so Mimi does die at the end of the musical, but in the movie version, they were like, oh, that's too hard for our audiences. She needs to live. And everyone was livid. Oh, she should have died.
It's funny you bring...
She had AIDS.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah, everybody in Rent has AIDS.
I'm sorry. Everyone has AIDS.
Don't start. But that's funny that you bring that up, because a lot of people who saw The Fly initially were like, oh, this is an allegory of someone dying from AIDS. Because, like, he's got this horrible thing happening to him, yeah. And he's slowly dying, and then Gina Davis is his loved one who has to watch him go through all of this. So a lot of people projected, like, that their
parallel.
Their own experience of either having HIV or
having
being
someone
being a loved
close
one
by.
Because it's really hard. I mean, now people don't know today, because HIV is much more manageable now, mm-hmm. but back then they didn't have medicines for it,
yeah,
and it was pretty gruesome to watch somebody die from that.
Yeah.
So
if you want to see what that's like, you can watch Angels in America.
Yeah.
That show is a very good representation of what people were going through in the 80s.
Okay. I've never seen that. We should watch that.
Yes, absolutely. Let's do it.
I know there was an HBO one.
There's like two. It's like two or three. I think it's two parts.
Yeah,
it's the long. HBO one. It's long.
Oh, I'm in.
Well, because it's the actual play, so like they didn't cut anything from the movie, so it's the real show.
Okay.
It's a good representation.
Cool. Well, all right, that brings us to the end of the movie. So, Aaron, I want to get a no bullshit assessment from you.
No bullshit assessment.
Tell me what you really thought of this film. Don't pull any punches.
Okay. I thought this movie was going to be worse than it was. When I first went into this movie, I didn't have that high of an expectation for it, because I didn't really hear about it. Whereas, like, I've heard of Ferris Bueller's Day Off, and I've heard of some of these other movies, but I hadn't heard anything about this movie except for you. And so going into it, I was like, I don't know if this is like a big movie. And therefore, I think big movie, people like it. I don't know how well this did. I mean, it seemed to do pretty well, like, money-wise in the theaters. You said it was only made for $9,000 and then sold for $60,000?
No, it was made for $9 million.
Oh.
And 20th Century Fox distributed it, and so that way it could go into a lot of theaters.
Okay.
And it made $60 million.
Okay. So that's a good amount.
Yeah.
To make off of an independent film. So I'm surprised I didn't hear about it before you. But I didn't have super high expectations for it. And so at the beginning of the movie, it is a slog. It's a slog. Until you get to him actually becoming the fly, once he comes out with those canes, the movie picks up and it's much better and it's much more fun to watch. I thought that Gina Davis was going to be his like wife before I started watching them. I was like, I know that there's this other person. I think it's a loved one. So it's going to be his wife. But then she's like a reporter. So I was like, that's a little odd. And I didn't know. When I first started it, I was like, what is this? This is not what I thought it was going to be at the beginning. But once it picked up, I enjoyed it. I enjoyed the second half.
That's good.
What's your no bullshit assessment of this?
Oh, well, I mean, I don't think we need to do, when we do the podcast, we'll just do the no BS assessment of the person that hasn't seen it.
Okay.
'Cause since I talked about it at the top, like, I love this movie. It's a big part of me and who I am for some weird reason, as dumb as that might sound. But it is. It's it really shaped me as someone who watches movies and someone who went to film school to try to make movies. This is kind of the stuff that I wanted to make, just weird, crazy stuff mm-hmm. that was fun and entertaining.
I bet it would be so much fun to be in this movie. So, like, performing in it, I bet they had a blast. Because, like, doing the, like, being in theater, the weirder shows, like Cats and Rocky Horror and, like, kind of like those cult classics, those are the most fun ones because it's like, I get to be a little extra crazy.
I get to be a little extra.
I think they would have had a lot of fun producing this.
Yeah. Honestly, I think everybody took it very seriously and cared a lot about the movie. That feels like it comes through a lot. Mm-hmm. And I don't think they really had that many issues with people, but I don't think Jeff Goldblum had fun getting all that makeup put on him all the time. And I'm sure Gina Davis didn't like looking at him in all that makeup all the time, because I'm sure they were friends and they liked each other. Mm-hmm. But it does not look like it was a fun movie to make to me, if I'm being completely honest. But I think in the aftermath and then looking at it and watching it, I think they're very proud of it. And they really liked it and they really worked hard on it. I think that comes through, mm-hmm. despite, you know, any flaw it has.
Well, that's going to do it for the main part of our show, but now we're going to play a little Fuck, Marry, Kill.
Woo!
So Aaron is going to present me with a scenario of three
fictional characters from different movies.
Okay.
And you have to tell me who you would fuck, who you would marry, and who you would kill.
And do I have to give a detailed explanation of why?
Exactly. Yes, okay. Absolutely.
Well, I think this is going to go spectacularly.
So, the three characters that you have are the Terminator.
Okay, a full-on robot.
You have, Jason Bourne.
Jason Bourne. Okay, I've seen one of those movies.
And then you have Rocky Balboa.
Rocky Balboa. Okay, so we got a robot, we got a boxer, and who was the other guy?
Jason Bourne.
Jason Bourne, a orphaned James Bond-like undercover agent. Okay, so I'm definitely going to kill Rocky Balboa.
Why?
Why would I kill Rocky Balboa? Because Sylvester Stallone doesn't want to.
Doesn't want to.
No, there's a story that when they were making Creed 2, that they're like, Sylvester, Sly, buddy boy, you got to die in this one so that Adonis has a reason to fight, maybe. I think it's something like that. I didn't see the movie. Mm-hmm. But he's supposed to have cancer in the movie, but he didn't want to. So he's like, oh, you know, maybe the neighbor could get cancer or something. So,
do they have any more movies about Rocky Balboa after that?
No, I think Creed 2 is the last one.
Do you think he wants to make more?
Oh, probably. Yeah. No, he's got a huge ego. I love Sly Stone. I love a lot of his movies, but the dude's got a huge ego.
Okay,
and he doesn't want to kill off his characters and stuff like. You know, Rocky won him an Academy Award, mm-hmm. even though he's a terrible actor. Yeah. But anyway, I'm sorry, Sly, buddy. I'm going to kill you. I'm going to kill Rocky Balboa. And I love the Rocky movies. So next is I got to fuck another one and marry another one, yeah. Right? Okay. So I think I'm going to fuck the Terminator. Because it would be like having sex with a robot fleshlight. You know, it's not human. Mm-hmm. It probably, you know, there's some pretty interesting stuff that a robot could do that another human couldn't.
True.
Just saying.
But you also won't get to live with that for the rest of your life.
I won't get to live with
it. Yeah. Okay. The part about marrying is like you get to fuck whoever you marry too.
Yeah, you're right. But the thing is, do I want to live with a robot who I'm constantly having to be like, hey, man, don't be so awkward all the time. Say no problemo instead of affirmative or whatever. You know, mm-hmm. That was the actual line from the movie.
Okay.
Terminator 2. Okay. So by process of elimination, you found out that I'm going to marry Jason Bourne.
Yes.
Right? Well, who doesn't love a mysterious man with no past, possibly no future? And he's got a big old government paycheck coming in the mail every month, and he's too busy fighting people overseas or doing whatever he does to spend it. So I get to spend it for him.
So you get to fuck the Terminator as much as you want.
What?
I'm saying they're not going to be there.
Oh, yeah. Well, I'm thinking like I thought the whole thing of the game is you get to fuck them one time.
I mean, I guess, yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's the way I'm doing it.
Okay. Cool.
All right. Well, that was fun. Mm-hmm. Well, that's going to do it for us here at Haven't Seen It. You haven't seen it?
You haven't seen it. You haven't seen it.
Thanks for listening, guys. Bye.